Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast. I'm Dr. Liz Murray, founder of this project, where each episode we will be sharing one interview from one of the voices from our project. Presented by myself and Laura Middleton Hughes, each episode will feature one voice, someone sharing their story of overcoming major medical problems early on in life, to share a message of strength, hope, and resilience to others. To learn more about the project, please visit our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And now for the latest episode. So welcome to another episode of Mortal and Strong. Today we have the lovely Helen here sharing her story of breast cancer and the complications she had with reconstructive surgery and then going on to be diagnosed with autoimmune disease. So welcome, Helen. Thank you for sharing with us.
So, right, we're going to start off today's interview with a little bit of an icebreaker, like we always do. So, just quick fire round, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, just tell us your answers.
Okay.
Lunch or dinner?
Dinner.
Shoes or slippers?
Slippers.
Winter or summer?
Summer.
Driver or passenger?
Driver.
Definitely. love or money?
Love.
Night in or night out?
Night out.
Tattoo or piercing?
Piercing.
Savory or sweet?
Sweet,
definitely. Morning shower or evening bath?
Evening bath.
And a cat or a dog?
Oh, I've got both.
Oh, stumped on the last one. Stumped.
I can't pick one.
That's fine. To be fair, a lot of people, we've had a few of those, haven't we, in the questions. Mm. So we're here today to talk about a couple of conditions that you have. Can we go back to the start before anything like this affected your life? And where were you in your life? And what made you go and see your GP in the first place?
Okay, so I had three children at the time, and our youngest was in the process of being diagnosed with autism. And we were going through the process. It took 2 or 3 years, and it was quite a stressful time.
It's a long process, isn't it?
It was a really long process from start to finish.
Yes, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so consequently, I wasn't spending a lot of time on me. It was all about everybody else, and it kind of is when you have children anyway. But I happened this one particular day to have a bath, and I wasn't doing that. It was just a quick 5-minute shower. That was all I would allow myself. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to run a lovely deep bath, and I'm just going to relax a little bit. And I remember finding quite a hard lump right at the side of my breast, right on my rib cage, and I didn't remember it being there before.
Although it's basically exactly where I found mine.
Yeah.
And did you know, were you in the habit of being breast aware and checking?
No, I didn't check.
When was
really?
This?
This was 2014.
So we're nearly
November.
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Yeah. And I was 41 at the time, and my mum died when she was 41. And there's this strange, I don't know what you would call it. Around that time, being the age that she was when she died, it was a really odd year for me. And for some reason, psychologically, I thought if I could just get to the end of 41 and into my 42nd year, then I've broken the spell.
Yeah. So you felt because she passed away that you were kind of tainted with the potentially same fate.
I was almost waiting for it, which sounds ridiculous, because what I found and what I dealt with was totally different to what took her away.
But it is that psychological feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. So I found this lump, and I said, and whether it was because I had that in the back of my mind that I was conscious that something might happen. It sounds ridiculous, but
no, I think it's
I knew what it was, and I said to my husband, can you come and have a look at this? Because I don't like how this feels.
So you thought it was cancer? Like, you sort of, in your head, you were like, this could be bad.
I wasn't sure it was cancer, but I knew it was something that shouldn't be there, because it hadn't been there before.
How did it feel? Was it like hard?
Hard pee.
Okay.
Hard pee.
Yeah, exactly like that. And some people say it didn't feel mobile, but though it didn't feel especially stuck either.
No, I know that feeling, yeah.
So I'm not one to leave things alone. So I rang the surgery the following day and said, I found this. And they said, okay, come up. So I went up the next day. And they thought it might be just a fatty lump or something. They weren't massively concerned about it, but they said they would send me up to the hospital within the 2-week wait. So I waited.
Just before Christmas.
So on Christmas Eve, on my 42nd birthday, I was in the hospital getting a mammogram. They did 5 mammograms because they couldn't get a clear image.
That's a difficult angle, isn't it? That's
really hard.
Yeah.
They did ultrasound and then biopsy.
Which is quite painful. Biopsy. It's weird, isn't it? It's like a hole
punch.
It's
more the sound that it makes.
Yeah.
It's like a gas going. It's like a, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really odd. And they said, this will make you jump. And I thought, no, this won't make me jump.
Did you jump?
Yeah, of course I did.
Yeah.
So they put some, I bled quite a lot. They put dressings on me. I then had, and clips in.
Yeah.
I then had to go back and have a mammogram to make sure that the clips were in the right place. And of course, the minute they squeezed my boob, I bled everywhere. And
so for anyone that doesn't know what the clip is, it's a little, almost like a little clip that gets attached to where they sort of assume the cancer is. Mm. So then they can find it and locate it easily, isn't it? Yeah. And when they then scan it in future, they can see if it's moved or changed. And then you had so you obviously got told that point they thought it was cancer, or did you have to go back and...
I had to go and have a prone core biopsy because they didn't get enough material. So I went back home. My dad arrived for Christmas. I had to play everything down because I didn't want the children to be upset. That was quite hard, actually.
Did they know that you had been to hospital?
No.
Okay, so you kept it quite hidden.
Yeah.
How old were they at the time?
Oh, goodness.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, they would have been...
How old are they now? Don't you know her children's age?
I don't know the age of my own children.
Oh, well, that's fine, don't worry. They were in their teenagers, yes?
So Sally was finishing doing her A-levels, Sam had just started at university, and Louis had just gone from primary school to
secondary
high school.
Yeah.
So they had enough going on without, I thought that I'll allow them into this. Only if I need to, but there was no reason.
That's the thing. What is the point in worrying other people when you don't know 100% if it is?
Yeah.
So actually, I was very similar. I didn't tell anyone until like literally the day, and then I only told a handful of people.
Mm. So I kind of swallowed that, and we had a normal Christmas, even though I was terrified.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to give that to them, just in case.
Yeah. You sort of want to protect them as well from.
Yeah. So then between Christmas and New Year, I went back and had the prone core biopsy, which was pretty unpleasant.
So what's that? Is it just a more invasive version of the biopsy you had?
Yeah, so I had to lie on my front on a bed, and there's a machine, isn't there? And it felt like it was boring a hole into my side. I guess that's kind of what it...
Like a mini apple core.
Oh my goodness. And then they go in and they take bits of it away. But what was interesting is... and then I had the diagnosis. And my doctor was brilliant, and I clicked with him straight away. I thought, my life in your hands. The moment I met him, I thought, I trust you to do this with me.
Yeah, that's good.
And he said, Helen, we found something nasty. He didn't say the cancer word, which I thought was interesting.
Okay,
And he said, I'm going to draw a picture of what we found. So he drew my boob, and I said, do you know what? That's really rude, because you could have started with my head, couldn't you?
Straight to it.
You're going to draw a picture
straight
of me.
Boob. You're all about the boob now. You are just a boob.
It's nice that you found the funny side of it.
Like you had a bit of. Have to. Yeah. It was so surreal. It felt like I was having an out of body experience. Like it was happening to somebody else because I was so calm about it. I think I knew.
Yeah.
I knew. So I was expecting it.
Okay.
But I'm really glad I didn't know what was coming.
At what stage were you when you were diagnosed? Was it a stage 3, stage 2?
It was DCIS.
Okay.
So not, well, cancerous cells, but not quite.
And had it gone to your lymph nodes?
No, thank goodness.
Okay, so just in the breast.
But as soon as I started to poke it, it grew.
Wow, okay.
Really quickly. It grew 4 centimetres in 8 weeks.
Wow, that's a lot.
It went crazy. And so I went from having a lumpectomy and radiotherapy very quickly to having a mastectomy.
And chemo.
I didn't have chemo. I missed out on chemo.
So they then gave you, as I say, going from a lumpectomy to a mastectomy, they just didn't get clear enough margins, or the fact that that had grown very quickly, they thought it was safer to do the full mastectomy?
I think so, yes. My surgeon said he'd never seen a DCIS that large that hadn't broken out and gone to have a look around elsewhere. So I count myself very, very lucky. Yeah.
And with the surgery, like, how did you find it? Because it's obviously... It's because it's a quite a personal part of your body. You don't generally sort of show it off to many people, but I've always thought of it as like, if you had your arm amputated, you'd get a lot of sympathy. If you got, you know, your foot amputated or something, you'd get a lot of sympathy. Because it's your breast, it's almost as though people don't see that as an amputation, but it's a huge part of your body as a woman. Huge. And it's been taken and replaced with either nothing because you're left flat or something that's quite unnatural to your body.
Yes.
How did you find that, like, psychologically and... Well, just, you know, the physical side of it as well.
That's the reason I was really keen on the immediate reconstruction.
Okay.
And I was told that that was, psychologically, that was the easiest route. Mm-hmm. And I opted for implant-based reconstruction because I was told that as a relatively fit and young Slim. Person, that was the easiest route out of the hospital. So I thought, this is a no-brainer. Of course, I'm going to go with that. But my body had other ideas.
Did it reject it?
So 4 weeks after my initial surgery, having gone through all of the difficult surgical recovery afterwards, I was just getting back on my feet and I went into the plastics clinic just for a routine appointment and they found infection. I hadn't felt it.
Oh, wow.
But they got hold of my surgeon, got hold of my breast and squeezed... And all of this disgusting infection came out.
So you didn't see any like redness?
I had no idea,
pain.
Nothing at all, absolutely nothing. Gosh. And she said, I can't let you go home. And they cannulated me then and they put me on the list the first thing in the morning.
Whip it out.
And then replaced it.
So they replaced it. They didn't have the right size. It sounds like shoe shopping. They didn't have the right size in stock.
They didn't have the box underneath
so
the little counter.
I've got another one.
Let me check out back.
Yeah. I can imagine them go through boxes. No.
Where's the one? Where is it?
So she said, I've got a smaller one, but we'll go with that for now. And I thought, for now?
Okay. But this is what, again, I think is really important to mention while we're talking about it. Mm. Is people just assume implants are the easy option. But there is nothing easy about any option.
What I was led to believe, actually.
I mean, I've had 4 surgeries in my reconstruction, and most people I hear, even if it's implants, will have at least 2, 3, possibly even 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether they, obviously not withholding information, but I wonder whether they maybe choose not to tell you those things because some people have a much easier ride than others and they don't want to say, this is going to be really difficult. But someone said quite early, this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Didn't sink in though.
No, because I have this crazy notion that everything is fine. I'm ridiculously optimistic.
That's good, but like you say, maybe not realistic.
It did catch me out a little bit here.
Yeah.
So,
and also you think you're going to be back on your feet after a couple of weeks, but you have all like the cording and the, because did you have lymph node removal as well, or some of them?
Yeah.
So that causes its own issues. Then you have the risk of things like lymphedema and even just a recovery, like you can't do a lot because it's in your chest.
Yes.
Especially with implants, they go behind the muscle.
You have to be really careful. You can't lift anything heavy. You can't move too quickly.
And it's actually quite painful. All the time, whether you're moving your arm, moving your body, your chest moves. And I think people forget that area is such a sensitive area.
Yes, it's not until you have something like that done and you have pain in that region that you realise quite, I love sleeping on my front. I discovered.
Then you couldn't do it.
I can't do that now.
It feels like you've got like hard balls in your chest.
So I then kept up with my dressings appointments and then 4 weeks later, my body rejected the second implant.
Oh, infection or just...
Wow.
Another infection, massive infection.
And did you not have a temperature with these?
No.
That's incredible.
So your body was just...
No, I felt fine.
Okay.
I felt fine. But for some reason, after the first one, I thought, I'm not sure this is going to... But did my body loves this very much.
when you were in hospital and you were being treated for the infection, they replaced it there and then?
Yes.
No. They should have cleared the infection first.
You never put something in when you've got an infection.
I felt rushed through.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, you're not clearing it up. You need to clear it up, sort it out, then redo it.
Yeah.
Because my surgeon said, I've really scraped around to try and get rid of as much as possible.
No.
But what happened next is when I had the implant, the second implant failed, and it was removed, and my surgeon said, you need to recover from this fully and then come back and we'll do the reconstruction later.
Were you given antibiotics at that point as well?
Yes.
Were you given?
Yeah, I'd had so many antibiotics.
And they weren't helping?
No. It became a bit of a running joke. Are you at home or are you in hospital? Well, I had different wards. I like to think I'd visited every single ward. People knew who I was when I turned up. I thought, this isn't, it's funny, but it's not great.
Oh, get special treatment. Again. Oh, hello.
Yeah, no, those slippers this time, not the nice ones that you had last time. Yeah, the physio would say, oh, you again?
Oh, gosh. And so when, like, did things start to improve after that? Or did you then take it out completely, heal up?
I had a cellular dermal matrix.
Hammock. Which is, for those that don't know, it's kind of made out of, it's some animal skin. They create a hammock to create a sort of base for your implant.
I want to say it's something to do with pigs.
It thinks pig skin.
I think so.
And it holds the implant or the reconstruction in place to stop it dropping or having problems.
But my surgeon also recommended it described it to me like Velcro. So while your body accepts the implant, the Velcro, I'll call it that because I don't know what it was, holds it in place, which is fine if there's an implant between that and your skin.
Mm-hmm.
But if you then remove the implant, my skin sticks to my chest wall.
Ooh.
So I had ridiculous problems with that to the point where I couldn't breathe properly because nothing was moving. I couldn't cough because the pain was so intense. Everything was tight and stuck. So I went into a clinic and my surgeon called for some Marcaine from the theatre and said, I'm going to inject you with this here.
Wow.
And the reconstruction nurse, who we all know, sat with me and she said, this isn't going to be pleasant, Helen. I'll be completely honest with you. You can squeeze my hand as tightly as you need to.
Did they give you gas and air?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
And she said, don't move because I could quite easily puncture your lung here.
Gosh. That's why you didn't get gas and air, because you needed to be
awake
yeah. to stay still.
And at that point, I thought, I've really had enough of this now.
Yeah, it's
I
a long...
just need to be left
alone. It's a long process.
So, and what I was left with didn't look like, obviously, a straightforward mastectomy because I'd had a skin-saving, areola-saving mastectomy, but all of that then got stuck to my front. Mm. And so visually, this was June, July, into September. September was my last...
Of 2015.
Yeah, was my last hospital admission because the pain was too much. And I couldn't breathe properly. And so they said, you're going to end up with pneumonia because you're just not moving stuff around properly. Yeah. So let's have you in. The pain team came to see me, got me sorted, and then I went home. And it was relatively quiet then until following September.
Okay, so they left you about a year alone. And you were flat at this point?
Yes. Yeah.
Was that hard?
Yes. Awful. Because I hadn't prepared myself for that stage because the immediate reconstruction means that it doesn't happen.
And I think sometimes it's harder when you've got one and not the other. Because if you were both flat, you can kind of, I don't know, just rock it. But if you've got one, you're still having to kind of wear a bra or think about how your clothing
looks. The technicalities are really difficult.
Yeah.
I would wear a necklace that would always end up hanging over this side.
Oh.
Which is a really simple thing, but actually it can really wore me down after a while.
And things like you maybe don't want to wear... like a lower cut top, you'd be hovering up or, you know, it becomes quite, it's that sort of thinking that everyone's looking at you because you feel different.
Yes.
Daily reminder that exists and that is controlling your life and that's robbed you of your identity.
I can see why immediate reconstruction is good psychologically because you don't actually have to deal with what it's done to
you. But
your
only
body.
If it works.
Only if it works.
And this is, you know, cancer itself isn't always, I mean, that the cancer probably seemed quite a simple thing to remove.
Yeah, it was the
it
surgery.
It was everything else on top of that.
It was the surgery that my body really didn't like at all.
And how did you feel like telling friends and family? Did you show them? Did you hide it? Like, were you sort of someone that was someone that spoke about it? Or was it too personal at that point?
No. There were certainly friends that I would choose to share it with, other people, some people I knew that would be upset. It's really interesting because I kind of chose who to tell based on how I thought they would react.
Okay.
Because there were a few people that would get really upset if I spoke to them about it. And that made me, I got guilt for that on yeah. top of everything else that I was dealing with. So I thought, actually, and people would say, I feel so sorry for it. So I don't need your pity. Mm. I need your support and I need your strength because I don't have very much of that of my own at the moment. So I had to be really careful. Quite a few. Some friends I chose not to see, which sounds a bit mercenary, but in actual fact, I had to kind of make a decision.
To look after yourself.
Yeah.
That period of time where your brain, you know, you're trying to get your head around this mastectomy, you're trying to get your head around talking to your friends and family. But did you find other people in that situation that you could talk to? Were there people in groups? Like, where did you find that other support, that the understanding around it?
I didn't really feel like I fitted in to any group at that point. I didn't feel old enough to go to the older women's groups. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really young enough to hook up with the younger women's support group. I was right in the middle.
Yeah.
So I didn't really find that. And I think that's what was missing.
Mm-hmm.
I know I could ring up somebody from a support group and we could have a chat on the phone, but it wasn't, I wanted to meet people. I didn't want to just have a phone call. I wanted to
make a
physical connection with somebody that knew exactly what I was going through. And I didn't find anybody. And that was quite isolating.
Yeah.
It was really lonely at that point. And because I was having so much hospital intervention and then recovery at home, I was stuck at home. I wasn't able to go out,
which then is also hard because you haven't got those things to kind of keep you going.
Yeah.
And did you feel, and this is something that I hear quite a lot with people who don't have chemo, but I might be putting words in your mouth, but did you ever feel that you...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Worthy or as, you know, as ill as those that maybe have gone through chemo, because you do hear that a lot.
Massive imposter syndrome. I haven't been poorly enough to fit into these categories. Yeah, my cancer was a pre-cancer. It wasn't even, there was nothing in my lymph nodes. I really shouldn't be this poorly.
Yeah.
I've just had a mastectomy, but actually.
But actually you have had cancer.
Yes.
And it's still relative. It's still, for you, the most traumatic thing that you have gone through.
Yeah. And because I couldn't find a group that I fitted into, that made that feeling even worse. I said, at times I think I just need to pull myself together.
Mm.
I really haven't been through very much at all. But actually, looking back.
You needed to heal and find your people.
I did. And I found my people. Thank God.
So talk about that then.
So
you obviously had your treatment. You had the year off. You did manage to get reconstruction again.
Yes, I had papflap reconstruction. So I used...
Papflap is a bit like in between your thighs. Mm-hmm. And again, quite invasive, isn't it?
But very.
They take a lot of skin between your thighs and on your butt cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you new boobs.
Limited.
But then you've got uncomfortability around here as well.
That was a huge recovery.
Yeah. Were you nervous? Because obviously there's such failures before. Were you thinking this is going to fail again?
I have never been so nervous in my whole life. I wanted it. I was ready for it.
Yeah.
but I hadn't quite appreciated how I was going to feel about it. I'd kind of bottled my feelings up and I'd put them over there.
Okay.
Because it was such a big thing to get my head around. They're going to cut bits off my legs and they're going to stick it on my front.
We do that, don't we? That we box things if it's like, nope, not today.
Yeah.
I did a lot of that.
And then you find it later.
It did come back to bite me later on.
It's it.
But I kept it in for my husband and I kept it in for my children mostly. Mm-hmm.
So what year was it that you finally had your pap flap and would say that your reconstruction journey kind of was finished?
So that pap flap was November 2016.
Okay. So that's like over a year later.
Yeah. That was when I found what I had been looking for.
So what was this? I mean, I could explain it, but I'm going to get you to explain it. What did you apply for? What did you do?
So in our hospital, there's, in fact, in other hospitals now, all across
the country, national, aren't they?
There's a support group called Keeping Abreast, and they support women who have had reconstruction because of a cancer diagnosis or because of a faulty, and they do a fundraising. It's called More Than Just a Fashion Show. So they invited us to apply, which I thought, yeah, I can have a go at that. We are put on the catwalk, having learnt some very elaborate dance moves. We're dressed by three or four different.
Maybe four. Shops. Maybe it was different shops. Yeah.
Hair and makeup done.
So it's a big event, isn't it? And yes. Every model on the catwalk is someone who's gone through breast cancer and we've all got our own stories.
Yes.
And that's where we met.
And that was when I thought, these are the people that I needed. And actually the relief was huge. Just having a conversation with someone who knew what I was talking about. I went, oh God, yeah, I remember that. And wasn't this awful? And what about this person? It's just, I think we didn't stop talking.
Oh, we had such a giggle, didn't we?
We did it.
Such
and I was on a high after that for weeks afterwards. Just because of what it was, but because of what I discovered.
Yeah, and because finding those people.
How valuable that support is.
It
not feeling isolated and feeling alone.
Massive. And that then, having that then allowed me to explore the things that I put in a box, which is not easy, but I knew that I had people around me that knew.
And then you could actually have those conversations, which maybe you've never had.
No.
Purge. You need to purge all that and get it out.
I did.
Lots of coffee and cake dates with talking about stuff.
But then, of course, COVID happened. And
we've actually had quite a lot of conversations around this, but finding community seems to be one of the biggest things in any form of illness, because actually it is. It's, you lose such a lot of, not necessarily lose your friends, but you lose that kind of being able to be completely yourself and that 100%, because you don't want to bring them down and constantly talk about it.
Mm.
But also they don't understand those little things. We always, and I think everyone that's had a reconstruction will have had someone say, oh, you get a free boob job. It is not a boob job. And you know, the way it mentally feels to lose a breast, to have to go through these numerous operations to get something back that is still not a breast.
Right.
It's still not proper. Yeah. It's still not you as a whole. I mean, we've actually both had as well the nipple tattooing, which again, people, you know, use on nipples. And even if you get sort of nipple sparing, it's stuck back on again, but it's not joined to the nerves. So you don't have the same feelings. You've got this hard or soft if you've had like, but like a boob that maybe feels a bit alien.
Mm.
And actually as a woman, like, we do forget that we grow breasts from probably about 9 years old.
Yeah.
And so to suddenly just lose that and lose your figure, the way you look, the way you feel, the confidence, it is more than a lot of people let on, I think. We don't dwell on those bits, but it is such a big deal.
It's huge. And actually, as a mother, being able to feed, lucky enough to have had three beautiful children, and being able to feed them, I felt like I'd lost
that
a bit of a connection with that as well. Even though I was able to keep one.
Mm.
So I had a balancing implant in this side. So I still have a breast implant in this side. So I have issues with that. And of course the other one is my, we call it my thoob, my thigh boob.
Your thigh boob, I love it.
We've had thoobs, now thoobs.
How did you find it change your relationship with your husband?
He became a carer to my patient.
Yep.
And that was really difficult. The dynamic completely changed.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about this. And actually, again, it's something people don't realise is a huge part of having chronic
illness. I really relied on him. And he became, because obviously I couldn't take care of our children, so he then became father, breadwinner.
Carer.
All of the things that I couldn't do. Plus, at the same time, trying to steer our son's diagnosis.
Is he quite open talking about his feelings, or did he sort of shut?
He held on to his, I think, because he didn't need to hear me. Or I didn't need to hear him saying, I can't cope with this.
That's it. You can't be there for him because you're in it. Yes. But then people forget about the carer and what they're going through, and it's not forthcoming with support and recognition of that person.
But there's also guilt that comes with that as a mother.
As the patient and the wife.
I'm lying here in bed and I really should be up doing washing.
But you don't have the energy or you're in pain.
But
or...
I did attempt to do that, which was stupid.
Put yourself in hospital with problems. Yes.
My husband would say to me, why are you cleaning the toilet? Because it needs cleaning. No, but you should be in bed where you're lying down, shouldn't you? Yeah, but it's a dirty toilet.
But it's like that. You can't just like sit and watch all the day.
No, the guilt is huge.
Yeah.
I don't have time to be this ill. So the fact that I was delayed so many times and stuck in bed.
Yeah.
My children are growing up. It sounds a bit dramatic, but I'm missing things. I missed stuff that I couldn't.
You missed a lot of period of time where you either couldn't go out or you just were mentally not in the right headspace. Mm.
Simple stuff like days out with the family, cooking a dinner for them.
My daughter's prom. Oh. Things like that. I mean, I managed to go and see her drive off, but...
You couldn't be there as you would normally have been.
No.
And then, obviously, you found your community through the Keeping Your Breast charity show. You know, that obviously opened up lots of doors into, as I say, conversations and people and finding a community.
Yeah.
So did you feel at that point you'd found a bit of you again?
Yes. Because I definitely wasn't the person I was beforehand. And I think quite a few of my friends struggled. I think maybe I wanted to talk about it, but everybody else moves on. I know that what happens to you isn't as important
to that
as your friends.
Yeah.
And so they deal with it and they move on.
Yeah.
But for us, it's still happening and it's still happening now. Some people, I think, are not prepared to give you that time.
Yeah.
So a few friends I don't see anymore.
It definitely...
Just because it petered out. Yeah. But the ones I have kept are really good friends. It kind of highlights the good ones.
And the ones you meet like along the way, obviously.
Of course.
the people that you that love you at your highs and your lows, and people that love you when you have nothing to give, and they will wait for you to catch up.
Yes.
They're the ones.
I remember holding my friend's hand. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror after they'd taken the reconstruction away for the third time. I didn't want to. I didn't want to associate with it at all. It hurt, and I really didn't want to know what it looked like. And she stood with me in front of the mirror and held my hand and said, look, we're going to do this together. Open your eyes very slowly. If you don't like it, you can shut them again. But by the time I leave it, you would have looked.
Getting emotional now.
And then, obviously, moving on from that point, you know, you've got your new breast, you've met your community. Mm. So since then and now, there's been other complications within your life in terms of your own health. Talk through a little bit about that, because you've had some issues with your thyroid and you've also had an issue with your back that's been quite an ongoing process, which you were, you know, from as being a friend, like you were very concerned about quite recently, and you've had a lot of complications with that. So how are things now and what's happened in that period?
Things are as settled as they can be. Mm-hmm. I had some pain that seemed to be in my left side. It tracked to my back and I couldn't quite work out what it was. So my first protocol was my breast surgeon, and he said, okay, let's do all the tests. So I'm going to send you for all the scans and we'll pick something up. So he started with it. So I had a bone density scan. I had an MRI.
Which is really good that he did that.
He was brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. In one of the scans, they found a soft tissue nodule, they said, at T6 and between T6 and T7.
Part of the spine, for those that don't know.
In my thoracic spine. And he said it could be the pain tracking man from that. So because of my breast cancer history, they took it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I had another MRI just solely to look at that.
And they ruled out the fact it was secondaries and it was something else.
It wasn't cancer, which was brilliant. They weren't quite sure what it was, but it was causing me increased pain at this point. I was continuing to work, but I was having to take increased medication because of the pain. Couldn't stop work because we needed me to be at work financially. But I was limited to what I could do, and it was getting worse. And this was worrying me and also my medical team. And then one day I was driving home and I had pins and needles in the end of my nose.
Oh, interesting.
And I thought, this is really odd.
Mm.
And it didn't go away. And the next day I sat in the garden, I had a day off, and our daughter had come home for the week. And I said, this is the strangest thing. I can't feel my legs from my knees down. I'm not quite sure what's going on. It just felt the sensation was odd.
Mm-hmm.
So I rang my doctor and said, I'd just been put on gabapentin for the pain in my back. And I said, this has happened. You told me to flag up any odd symptoms. What do you think? And he said, well, it could well be the gabapentin. So stop taking it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens. So I stopped taking it and it got worse. Mm-hmm. To the point where I couldn't walk. I was crawling around on the floor in our house.
Did you go to A&E?
Didn't at that point, because positive Helen doesn't do things like that.
Helen's
positive,
like, I'll Helen go says, to bed and it'll be up again.
I'll just go to bed like this. I'll just hop off and it'll be fine. But at that point it got a bit scary. And
well, we actually met for a coffee and cake one day, and then that afternoon you ended up going in, didn't you?
But I was thinking, this has to be something to do with my spine. It's too much of a coincidence. And people jumping down saying, yes, we need to get me an emergency MRI. Mm-hmm. And it was a practice nurse who I spoke to, and she said, I had a blood test recently. And I said, no, why? No. I've got a tumour on my spine. Why do you want me to have a blood test? And she said, do you know what? It wouldn't hurt.
Okay.
So let's do a full blood count. And they discovered that my TSH, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I was getting it wrong. Was
your thyroid hormones?
64.
Wow.
And I think it should be between about 2 and 4. Something like that.
So very different.
Yeah.
My thyroid had just gone bang. And we still don't really know why.
That's because you'd not had radiotherapy.
Does radiotherapy often...
Yeah, that could have caused, but you didn't have that. So
absolutely nothing. And I'd had a full blood count of about 5 or 6 months previously.
And did you have any swelling on the neck?
No.
No kind of sweating, flushing, weight changes?
No. Absolutely just nothing. Just loss of my legs. Just all of a sudden.
It's amazing, isn't it, how these things can just crop up and not being related to your cancer, but it kind of still, like the symptoms and stuff, you sort of do worry then, don't you?
Yeah.
But in a way, it was possibly good that, with your previous diagnosis, they got you seen quicker, that maybe it would have been a longer wait had it not been
for that. There are some benefits.
Yeah.
Patient then that added the third thing into the mix. So not only did I have I was dealing with the tumour, I then had a grossly underactive thyroid.
And they were saying it was autoimmune.
Yes. So they found antibodies, which means that my body attacked itself.
And since you've managed to go on medication and help, or have you managed to...
So the medication took about 6 months to get to where it needed to be.
Again, it's a long time, isn't it? A long time of juggling stuff.
An awful lot. And also because a lot of my symptoms crossed over, it was really hard to pick out what was causing what.
Mm.
And we still don't really know. Yeah. But then I was able to, it meant then once that was sorted and stable, I was then able to go back onto the pain medication that I really needed for my back.
Okay.
Yeah. Which then is really important because you can then hopefully live better.
Yes.
With that.
But then I had a flare up. I was getting a little bit anxious, and the situation with our son as he got older was becoming more challenging, and I definitely wasn't taking care of myself, and I could feel myself slipping. So I self-referred to Suffolk Mind. And I was going to have a webinar called Relaxation Station, ironically. So I had a lovely coffee and cake with you guys, rushed home,
to relax.
Yeah. Set myself up, and it began, and within about 3 minutes, I had a searing pain in my back, like someone had put a hot rod through my spine. It was horrendous, to the point where I couldn't move. I had to call my husband from my phone. He was only downstairs. It hurt to breathe, and I thought, something's gone really wrong here. He calls an ambulance. No, I rang 111 because I thought, I'll get some advice here. because I talked about a tight band of pain around my chest, yeah. I thought I was having a heart attack.
So straight away ambulance.
Yes. And so the girl said, we're going to send an ambulance based on what you've told me. Are you? I'm sorry, I'm pretty sure
you ticked the algorithm down to blue light.
Breathing her. Yes.
Okay. So paramedics arrived. It did get progressively worse. They took me to hospital. And because I was waiting to have MRI results at the time from my spine, they didn't want to do any more. They just put me on more pain medication. They put me on morphine, Oromorph and Zomorph.
Gosh, dosing you up.
Yeah. As well as the gabapentin.
Didn't scan or anything?
Scan came through that it was fine. Nothing was a problem. The tumour was exactly the same size as it was. Went still there. It's not going. They said it's... they then diagnosed a paraganglioma, which is quite rare, I think. Mm-hmm. They haven't biopsied. But I think there is maybe a connection between an autoimmune condition and a paraganglioma. Mm-hmm. It's very tenuous, and there's not an awful lot of research that I can find. But for now, that's something that I don't need to deal with.
And it's sort of just being monitored for the moment.
Yes. Yeah. So actually, I'm now at a point in my life where I can say...
Touch a bit of word, yeah.
Things are quiet, but it never lasts for very long.
You're almost on the edge of waiting to see what's next.
And when you have had so lots many of drama, complex yeah. health issues going on, you know that something is going to flare up at some point.
You get into a point where you can't fully enjoy the highs because
you're waiting for the lows
and you're waiting for the next emergency, the next hospital appointments.
Yes.
Mm. It almost feels unnatural to be well for quite some time because you're waiting for, you're waiting to go back into patient mode because you know it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
And it's and that again is something else people don't appreciate. Your everyday kind of psyche is patient mode is still in your head. So every pain, every twinge, is this going to flare up? Is this leading to something else? Mm. You can't fully switch off and forget about it.
No.
What would you have said, knowing all of this, 10 years ago to Helen back then? What would you have said to yourself? Was there any advice you would give if someone was starting this journey?
Double check. The internet can be a dangerous place sometimes, so be careful what you look for, but always ask for a second opinion if you're not sure. Feel heard. Make sure that people you are understanding what people tell you. Take somebody with you to the executive appointments because I never remember what they tell me.
And a pen and paper.
Yeah. Although I sometimes forget the pen and paper.
You dissociate, don't you? In those appointments, you dissociate. And that's why you should have someone because you're not there. You've floated away.
And for me personally, that's how I cope with it. Is that I go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But that's not good when you're trying to retain a lot of complicated information.
And right now you're feeling quite positive about life?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking kind of forward to nice things this year and...
Definitely.
I think you need to have that, don't you? That hope and that positivity and finding that kind of... Finding you again and just being able to enjoy life while you're still here.
It's really important actually to check in with yourself and make sure that you're not feeling too overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it can start... It's a bit like a small wave that can start in the background. And if you don't check it... It can turn to a tidal wave really quickly.
And don't put things in a box.
Yes. Yes.
Or just temporarily until you have the space to unpack it.
Or kind of have a chat with yourself at the end of the day and say, actually, that was, that day was difficult. And how are you feeling about that? Are we all right still?
Mm-hmm. Being honest with yourself, isn't it? And everyone around you.
And it's about finding a different relationship with your body because it's never going to be the same again.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it can be better. I think I'm okay with myself now. I think I've forgiven myself.
And so we are asking everyone as well, what is one thing that gets you up and out of bed in the morning and puts a smile on your face?
My children have to come first. It's my children. And then my garden. Well, my husband should go in.
Sorry. How far down the list is he? You know, children, garden, dog, car.
Yeah.
Maybe husband. I think that's, we've definitely heard a lot of that. It's either children or fur babies.
Yeah.
And garden is another one that we've heard that a few times.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's those things that give you a purpose, give you a focus.
Yes.
A reason to
keep
and it's going. The small things, because actually it's not the massive gifts. It's not the massive,
it's not the things you would necessarily expect.
It's not the money. It's not the program that's never been released today. It's not where you're going on holiday. It's
waking up and knowing you're alive with the connections.
Yes. Yeah. I've got plans. It's always good to have plans like you do.
Yeah.
always have something in the diary, always have someone that you're going to go and see, things that you're going to go and do. And it doesn't have to be massive.
A nice walk, a nice cup of tea.
Yeah. So yeah, the little things, the good wholesome things.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking your time today to come and be one of our 100 voices. It's really incredible. And hopefully your story will help inspire so many more people.
I really hope so.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks, Sal.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.